Welcome once again to the month 10 October Investable ETR briefing. And the period we're covering today obviously covers the trading period from the 1st of October to the 31st of October. As the briefing document explains, exchange traded receivables are leases, monetary obligations are bills issued under contract for assets, goods, and services supplied to investment quality companies are credit insured invoices from investment grade insurers. So really what that means is that an ETR is evidence of a debt owing from one company to another. And typically these tend to be the large companies or banks that are household names, and they owe money to their smaller micro to medium sized suppliers. And we call these micro to medium sized supplier businesses originators, because they originate the debt obligation transactions that ultimately create the ETR that are traded on the exchange. The ETR is evidence of the large company's liability to pay the smaller one, and credit exchange buy these ETR at a nominal discount to their face value. And by doing that, when the ETR are settled or paid in full, the difference between the face value that it settles at and the discount or the lesser value that it was purchased for creates a margin. So it's that margin that creates the yield or return for investors. So we at Credit Exchange also provide credit facilities to other types of transactions, such as trade finance, asset finance, and others. Essentially, they all work on the same principle that the traded ETR is a business transaction. We provide the liquidity and we're paid a commission for doing so, pretty much in the same way that a bank charges interest. So as the briefing states, at the end of October, Credit Exchange held active RSA of 18.04 million. This is off by about circa 20% for the same period in 2019. So 20% as a number is a significant change on a year-on-year basis. But as I'll explain later in this briefing, it's a reflection of the originator market decline for 2020. So anyway, RSA stands for Revolving Sale Agreement. And a revolving sale agreement is a document or contract between the micro to medium-sized business or the originator and the exchange. So the revolving sale agreement is a commitment by the originator to sell a certain value of ETR to the exchange in any given period. Typically, this is for 1 year. So, for example, let's say an originator needs a revolving credit facility of $250,000 in order to run their business. They'll come along to Credit Exchange much like they would a bank, and they'll apply for that credit facility. If we agree to offer it to them, the $250,000 on a revolving basis, let's say every 60 days, they must agree to sell us that $250,000 worth of ETR on a revolving sale agreement or RSA. So you multiply 60 in, or you divide 360 by 60, you'll get six. Six times 250,000 is 1.5 million. So they're committing to selling us 1.5 million worth of ETR every 12 months. So it's that commitment to sell the 1.5 million of ETR annually to the exchange that's documented in the RSA agreement. And as stated, at the end of October, we held 18.04 million of these active RSA contracts. For the last five consecutive monthly briefings, I've said there's a significant decline in the total value of RSA contracts owned by us. And that's a combination of quarter two and quarter three trading that has continued to be compounded in quarter four. Again, there's more on this feature of 2020's trading. I'll go into that in a bit more detail later in the briefing, but it's not a surprise to the team here We certainly didn't predict the coronavirus, but we predicted the change in trading patterns, and we were experiencing, or we could see that there was a decline coming in our trading, and we needed to deal with it. So the decline materialized in the figures that we published for 2019. But thankfully, having put a strategy in place late 2018 into 2019, and we initiated it last year, that corrective action has produced the desired positive results that are now evident in the accounts for 2020. Our move further into trade finance, and indeed early indicators from shipping, are that we've interpreted the market correctly and to our advantage. The briefing in January of next year will highlight the initial positive results from our actions during 2020. As this briefing is about October's trades, we continued the positive increase in trading. It was slightly behind the target set in January. So from prior briefings, I would have explained we set a target to increase annual trade volume and value by, well, value, I should say, not volume, value by 75% in 2020. And our predictions are that we'll certainly hit the 150 mark. Are correct. We can now confirm that we're going to pass the 150 mark anyway. So although we're reporting on month 10, we are in fact week 48 today, and we can see clearly as November's briefing will confirm that we're past 150. Will we make 170, 175? It really depends on the events of next week. And again, as with prior briefings on the matter, as the overall effect of COVID has had on the exchange, it's been a positive one as opposed to a negative in terms of the benefit to investors. In fact, from an internals meeting plan for 2021, recent discussions have pointed to the fact that what we were seeing in the market in 2018 that forced us to take corrective action last year is one of the reasons that we're getting the strong results that we have in 2020. And it's actually COVID that confirmed our concerns. What I mean by that is the coronavirus accelerated the decline in certain sectors of our business. Without it, the decline would have extended into 2, 3, or even 4 years. But thankfully, the corrective actions in 2019 has meant that when the COVID did hit the market, we had turned ahead of it anyway. So our market focus was correct. And where declines were sharp in one sector, the increases were equally sharp to the positive in others. So overall, this has left us with our strongest year to date, with both income and profits substantially higher than in any prior year since the exchange opened for business. The briefing then goes on to say that there was 26.93 fully allocated, and this is a repeat, albeit marginally lower, of September's allocation of 27.92. What this fully allocated figure means is that on the 31st of October, the exchange held ETR valued at 26.93 million, or said another way, there was 26.93 million of investors' funds in the market on the last day of October. And we still held the RSA of circa 18.04 million. When you add this 18.04 million of future orders to what we had on our books at the time, you combine those two figures together, you come to roughly 45 million. So this reversed the 4% increase in September and has brought us back to August's performance. So small decrease, but not significant. Moving on to the next figure It states that investors redeemed roughly 560,000 of their funds in October, meaning collectively and coincidentally, a total of 17 investors, which is the same number as it was in September, withdrew just over $500,000 during last month. And at the same time, more than a million of new or additional funds were received, coincidentally again, from another 17 different investors. So these investors' funds were a mixture of private monies using ETOR as a safe haven for their cash, private companies, I should say, using ETOR to store their cash, and then an even split of pension funds in the form of ARF, PRBs, and PRSAs, and then private investors' savings. So the level of 0.5 million withdrawals would be consistent with, say, 2018's numbers, as is the ratio of the money in versus money out. So apart from quarter one in 2014 and the first half of this year as a direct result of what I'd call the COVID jitters, investors' inflows continue to outgrow withdrawals and are consistent with prior year's trends. 220 is mirroring more closely 218 than 219. As repeated over multiple briefings this year, the coronavirus that has caused the economic crisis has been and is good for investable investors with continued liquidity and stability in our market. And this brings the focus of the briefing document to the ETOR average duration of 92 days. This number that we call the credit index is the average duration or number of days it takes for an ETOR to get settled. So it's the cash-to-cash life cycle from the day the ETOR is issued and purchased by paying out cash, and the number of days it takes for the debt to be extinguished or settled and the cash returned to us. So the credit index hit an all-time high of 134 days in June and would be a concern to any originator awaiting payment. So the return back to 92 days, or coming back from 134, I should say, to 92 days is just a couple of days below that of the index for the same time last year. So for all originators in the market, this 92 days means payments in October of this year were as efficient as they were in 219. Talking about this in a little more detail, this number means that on average it took 92 days for ETOR to settle. That means that originators have the same revolving credit facility requirements this year versus last year. However, as we all know, the current easing of lockdown next week, which I think will be announced tonight, may provide some respite, but it's probable that another lockdown will be mandated in January. We expect to see the index climb above 100 due to seasonal delays over Christmas period. And I think next year is going to be pretty much like it's been for the first, not the first 4 months, but the period from April, May, June. So that quarter, I think we're going to see quarter three repeated in quarter one, quarter two, and quarter four of next year. Anyway, so for the past few months to that point, I've talked about slumps in consumer spending being offset by the increase in other market improvements, such as food, utilities, and expenditure in the medical sector. In this area, the increase has and continues to be led by trade and personal protection equipment, or PPE. But in examining all of the active originators in our market, we can see that 2/3 of those companies have experienced on average a decrease in trade of 45%, or almost half of their business this year. So a company that was trading, say, 2 million euro last year, or had a turnover of 2 million euro last year, is now looking at a turnover of maybe 1.1 million this year. So this reduction of 45% is hard evidence of the concern I voiced last month. At that briefing, I spoke about the PwC report that was expecting an 11 to 12% decline in our economy. Back then and again now, I'd suggest the UK's drop in GDP, the decline in Ireland as a result of Brexit, and that 17% ESRI figure rounded out to 20%. I think they're all too conservative. From what we see, Pricewaterhouse and the ESRI figures aren't speaking to the devastation in the micro to medium market sector. So 20% is not the number. It could be double that. It's certainly double that right now, and whilst we're at this briefing. So the EU and indeed our government continue to prop up the market with wage subsidy supports and pandemic unemployment payments. But we're looking to a local and UK market that's going to be very tough, both economically and emotionally, I think, for many business owners next year. I mean, you don't have to look very far from the door of your own office to see the devastation out there. And the figures from the market analysts are confirming it. However, and thankfully, it's not all doom and gloom, where the 65% of our originators are suffering and suffering badly. There's another 35% that are flourishing. In this third of our market, they're showing trade increases in excess of 200%. So without being disrespectful to those that are suffering, for the exchange where two-thirds of our market are off 45%, on the other side, we have the other third prospering and prospering well. So the net effect to us is a 10% drop in last year's trade, or last year's repeat trade this year. So an originator that has been with us last year for their first year and is now in their second year, you compare those two sets of numbers, they're overall down 10%. But then when you add to that 50 million of new business we've added during the course of this year, this explains the overall strong increase in our trading results for 2020. Talking to the quality of those prospering originators in the third of our originators that are doing well. Earlier in the year, I mentioned we have two installations of large plant in the quarrying sector in the West Midlands in the UK, one in Shire Oak and the other in Shipley. According to Lloyds Bank UK Recovery Tracker, the metals and mining sector was the most notable upside outlier, maintaining its position as the UK sector's furthest ahead of the global benchmark for the second month in a row. So the quarrying mining section, which is one of the areas that we have exposure to, is the best performing against all benchmarks for the last 2 months. So that speaks just to one example of the direction we went in 2019 and how this has benefited our investors. On the note of mining, we are also mid-contract negotiations on adding a third mine to our portfolio down in Hammerdon in the southwest of England. This is called Tungsten West. When it comes online, it'll be the seventh supermine in the UK for aggregates. And if the proposed tungsten mine is reopened, it will be the fourth largest such mine in the world. So we should have some more news on that in quarter one of next year. We may be in a good and indeed strong position despite the consumers about turn to survival mode. And we can see the continued negative yield for pension holders in cash, with their bank deposits now running at 65 basis point negative. I've spoken of concerns in the US and the UK on inflation, and we've discussed Brexit and how it's not getting the attention it deserves. And of course, the devastating impact that COVID has had on the labour market, where almost two out of every five jobs in the Republic of Ireland have been disrupted by this. But again, speaking to the strengths of our focus and the direction since late 2019 and all of this year, there are very strong signals coming from other markets where we are trading in. So, for example, looking at shipping and trade, the Howe Robinson Container Ship Index, or the HRCI, this measures the rates for small to medium-sized box ship container vessels, and this index is coasting at its highest level in 12 years. So for the past 20 weeks of straight charter rate rises, the HRCI has pushed up to rate of over 930. So that's the highest level since 2008. So somebody's manufacturing stuff somewhere, or somebody's sourcing commodities somewhere, and they're putting it on container ships, and they're trading it to other parts of the world, which is one of the products, our trade finance, that we have been focusing on since the late part of 2018. In Germany, the similar new context that measures charter rates in the narrower band of the 11 to 6,500 20-foot equivalent unit band is just beneath 5%. Is just 5% beneath the levels that it reached in 2011. So again, another strong indicator of markets heading back towards pre-COVID levels. There is an exception in the market that seaborne trade will shrink a little bit in the early part of next year, but the drop in volumes is likely to be smaller than previously expected. And they are expected to shipments are expected to rebound strongly in 2021 as demand outside of China catches up. This sentiment is further borne out by the Institute for Supply Management, the ISM, or also known as the Purchasing Managers Index, the PMI for the United States. So the purchasing index jumped in October and beat its market forecasts. So this pointed to the strongest growth in factory activity since September of 2018, another good sign. So the manufacturing economy continued its recovery in October, and the survey committee members reported that their companies and suppliers continue to expand output. So overall, the PMI's committee sentiment was optimistic, so the article reads. And on the subject of the USA, this naturally brings up the fact that with the end of the Trump era, we may expect to see possibly the end of trade wars too. This has to bring a positive effect that will benefit worldwide trade. Biden's green agenda may damage the oil sector a little bit, or maybe a lot, depending on what articles you're reading, but it should help trade overall, as hopefully he will end these trade wars and possibly open up sections of markets like Iran. Not completely, but there was some positive trade coming out of Iran prior to Trump's taking office. For Ireland, given his Ballina ancestral connections, he seems pretty determined to prevent a hard border with the UK. So I think he'll encourage Johnson to work with the EU to come up with a deal. So what are we now? 4 or 5 weeks remaining. It looks like a deal that will come down to the wire. So let's see if they can ink it in time. But anyway, to finish up with the US opinion, several institutions and analysts, including the US Energy Information Administration, the EIA, all expect consumption to be back at pre-COVID levels as early as late spring. Or early summer 2021. So we continue to examine the economy in Ireland and that of the UK, and seeing what we see, we must continue to expand our international trade. We think that's essential. If we are to continue to accelerate our growth, we have to continue and at the same time maintain the highest levels of quality exchange traded receivables. We have to do it outside of just Ireland and the UK. So that's not to say that the Birmingham office, it continues to contribute well to the overall business. But during October, we formally engaged two long-serving ex-senior executives of Bank of Ireland, and they're assisting us in the international trade transactions in Europe. And indeed, there's been one interesting transaction that came out of Singapore in the last week. Nothing has been agreed or traded yet, but the early signs are that this alliance with these two gentlemen will help deliver on our international strategy. And with the help of these two highly experienced and indeed motivated ex-bank executives, I think we're going in the right direction. As these transactions occur and materialize, I will update you in future briefings. We haven't repeated the July all-time trade high of 37 million in October. But we did, however, improve on the slightly poorer than expected September trade and turned in at 13.31 million. This is almost identical to August trade of 13.24 million. I did mention this in last month's briefing, and indeed October's figure is good and was a pullback to the positive, albeit we didn't beat the August number. The elusive larger transactions remain just that, elusive. But our managing director remains sure he can deliver before year's end. So let's see if that materializes. If it does, we could coast past the 175 million mark, which is our target for the year. And if not, we'll have to be content with a 50% increase at around the 150 million mark. Below last month's trading figure of 13.31 million, you will see that in the same period, Treasury performance was 14.85 million. This means that we spent roughly 13.5 million and collected almost 15. As with September, that's an overbalance of inflow versus outflow, meaning trade purchases were below that of trade settlements. And as you already know, Trade Desk and Treasury monitor this trade balance following credit risk policy and keeping governance over the risk and general exchange trading policy as is their remit. So the continued return back to an almost even flow of trade and cash, and the improvement in the stabilizing of the credit index at 92 days would have helped been a contributing factor in this Treasury's performance. Moving to the center of the document, we've got the 10 largest investable ETR holdings and the top rated holdings. So we can see again the HSE and Huawei continue to hold their slots for the eighth month in a row. As with last month, there's Atradius, CBRE, and Vodafone. Cork City Council came back in July and is now in its fourth consecutive month. On the right are the highest rated debtors, but as there's none of them had an investment grade or none of them were investment grade rating, it's simply a selection of the most credit worthy. As has been the case since the second quarter of this year onwards, the pie chart below showed the continued significant change in what used to be a particularly well-diversified spread of ETR across the market. Since Q2, COVID continues to show that the HSE here and the NHS in England, along with others in the health and community sectors, are off their April high of 25% of our book, but they still remain at the 15% mark. The advanced stages of negotiation in September, October, where we expect to conclude several significant trades in personal protection equipment, still haven't materialized. As I said, our managing director remains convinced they'll trade before year end, but with only 4 full weeks of trading remaining. He could be right, but these were expected back in August, and then again in September, and here we are in November. Let's see how it goes. Returning to the graph, as with the past two quarters, this pie chart also repeats a heavy exposure to the wholesale retail market, which, as before, is more wholesale than retail. You've got Dunn Stores and Musgraves maybe regular, making regular appearances on the top 10 list. But in general, as we know, high street retail continues to experience a severe downturn. Started in February or March of this year. Who knows when it'll recover? But looking to the wholesale trade, this continues to perform well. It's pretty fast, fluid transactions that are recurring and stable. We are continuing our migration away from the EU NACE categorization. Next week, we start the reflagging of 6,200 debtors. And we're going to slightly modify the classification system, adding another 10 categories to it, primarily to split out the specific sectors into commodity-based trades, and also to separate and subdivide shipping out of freight and transport into its own set of categories as we develop our trade appetite in that area. From a trade receivables risk perspective, we continue to look to the players in the trade, namely who's the originator, who's the debtor, what's the product, what's its primary and secondary market value, and ultimately what's our risk exposure in each trade. So to improve our reporting in this area, separating out shipping and commodities would allow us to report more clearly on trends in those two sectors. So the classification system is en route and should be completed by the end of next month. So returning to the actual performance of the exchange in October of this year versus October 2019, you can see the trading values were up again almost 70%. This is the same growth that we experienced in September and continues that strong pullback to the positive from quarter two. However, despite this repeated 70% pullback to the positive, reaching the year's target income and budget for a growth rate of 75%, in reality, today is a 50-50 split as to whether we'll hit that number or not. Having said that, personally, I think we're privileged to be in this position at all. Talking about whether we'll add 50% to our annual revenue or 75% when two-thirds of our originators are suffering from a 45% decline in their own trade is sobering at the very least. Earlier, I spoke of the credit index of 92, and next to that, you can see we still have more than 6,200 creditors or debtors and creditors at month end October. As per prior investor briefings, relative to the number of trading companies in Ireland, that's a significant and statistically strong reference point. So the credit index tells us how credit control and payment cycles are performing in Ireland. 75 days has been the best base mark cash to cash cycle indicator for Ireland, the UK, for the past 3-4 years, 2017, 2018. At 92 days, the market's off its base by more than 20%, obviously, but as mentioned earlier, it's the same level as it was in 2019. And to finish our performance in October, the largest single trade was just under 3.4 million euro. As explained in our investable brochure, the average value of investment is 2,000 euro, but we've traded everything from 1 euro up to, in this case, 3.39 million. This is one of our trade credit offerings and is one of a total number of trades that in 2018 was more than 30% of our trade. It dropped to only 10% last year, but has returned back to a healthy level of 30% of trade for this year. So this 3.4 million was another livestock export trade against a letter of credit or LC. And as stated previously, we prefer LCs simply because it moves our risk from a debtor risk to a bank risk, which tends to be stronger. Moving to the last part of the briefing, the trend section, we can see that the investor's yield or buy price during October averaged 1.814%. That's almost identical to September's average of 1.810. So, as explained earlier, in the current market conditions, with two-thirds of the market in serious trading decline, and then combine this with our high standards and negotiations surrounding the onboarding of new originators, the issues with new origination remain unchanged in month 10, as with all months prior this year. So this continues to affect our ability to raise the yield levels at this moment. For the past number of months, I've continued to point to the market stability of ETR, and it's commendable to have been able to hold steady at 10 to 20 basis points off the 2.0% mark. But when you compare this to the negative 65 basis points in the bank, your investors are getting yield that is 2.75% better than the bank deposit. In the briefing, it mentions we do need to consider introducing a year one bonus as a concept for discussion. The idea is to ask the attendees in this call for their feedback, and I'll do that at the end of the briefing. We see this as a possible way of improving yield for investors and to boost cash inflow versus cash outflow on the exchange. Prior to last investors conference call, I mentioned we were in negotiations on three separate deals, and although they looked like they were about to close in October, they've rolled into November and now looking more like 2021 quarter one transactions. So this rate changes daily. You can check it on the investable.com website. But to summarize, credit exchange needs to come up with some way of trying to boost that to give a stronger return to investors. So I will ask that at the end of the discussion. So to sum up, we started at 8.812. As the days passed, it rolled slowly down and then settled up at 1.821. So to finish the briefing, you will see a repeat of the active RSA or evolving sale agreement of 18.04 million. So thank you very much.